I'm guessing because maybe people didn't have the language back then that they do now.
I agree.
I think we have access to so much now. Mm-hmm. So many resources, books like this, podcasts, you know, therapists. There's so much surrounding how we can grow and be better and be more conscious in our relationships than I think ever has been.
There's less of a stigma. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember growing up seeing like the word or the phrase shrink in shows, like you're going to see a shrink. And now it's so much a part of our normal life to speak to therapists and specialists and listen to podcasts and just really feel comfortable in who we are. Mm. So I think it was a different thing growing up.
I agree. Different. I'm so glad it's different now.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm so thankful for these type of books too and this information. So why do you think or feel that this book is resonating so deeply with so many parents in 2025?
Parents. There's a few things that stood out for me, and especially as parents. I mentioned one thing, like the let our kids kind of feel things, let them fall, let them fail. You know, it's your first instinct to want to catch them, to want to hold them, to want to solve it for them and fix everything. But really, in the reality is like, we need to let them learn from life. And if we can show up for ourselves, the things we can control, which are our thoughts and our words and our actions, those are really the only things I can control, which she walks you through in the book, is then I can show up better for my kids when they do fall and when they do fail and when they do have a hard baseball game and when my daughter does have a tougher day at school or she's frustrated trying to tie her shoes or something. I don't need to go in there and tie her shoe for her. I can be there patiently watching her do that and just be a support for her. And I think that's different than previous generations. So I think that's really resonating with me because it's giving me a sense of calm during those processes. And it's like, it's okay. It's all going to come together. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is when you become a parent, I've noticed a lot of your friendships change and your relationships mm-hmm. change. And I wasn't expecting them to change as much as they did. And sometimes I would try to force them to be maybe what they're not anymore. And so this book really does go a lot into friendships, adult friendships. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a really good message to people as well.
I love how you mentioned friendships, because to me, that stood out so brightly in the book. And I wasn't expecting to find that in this book. Mm-hmm. And she really does talk about how her idea of going first, right? Mm-hmm. And she says to say hello. Smile, compliment people without expectation. That's what she's advising here, mm-hmm. to make new friends if you're struggling. I hear this from a lot of women, Emily. They're like, mm-hmm. I moved to Savannah. I don't know anyone. I don't have any friends. I don't know how to do this. And I've even heard one step further. I don't have kids school age anymore, so I mm-hmm. don't even have that as a bonus, which, by the way, I do feel is a bonus. Yeah. You and I wouldn't know each other if our kids didn't play baseball together. Where would we have met?
And that's what she talks a little bit about in her book, that mm-hmm. sometimes friendships are just timing. Mm. They're just where you're at in your life. And it's yeah. okay that other people are not in that phase in your life. It's all right. They can be in a different phase. But you do make new friends if you're open to it based on just where you guys align on that timing.
Absolutely. And actually, I'm going to share this. When I was in elementary school, I remember my mom gave me some great advice as a little girl. She said, if you want to make friends, compliment people.
Yes.
Just say something.
I've always done that.
Like 48 years later, I'm still remembering this because it was so valid, right? Like just say, hey, I like your hair, or I like the way I like your handwriting, something mm-hmm. like that. Something even more personal, right? Like I like the way you're so easygoing, or I like the way, whatever it is, find something. I mean,
even if you don't like something about mm-hmm. someone else, you can still be complimentary to them.
Yes.
Like, good for you for getting up and going to the gym. Maybe they're not your favorite person, but good for you.
Right.
Like, why not be people's cheerleader? Like, sometimes you never know what's going on in someone else's world. And I think that's another thing about parenting. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes that person could be having their worst day. And if you say something nice and uplifting, you may have shifted the course of their day. And I've always done that. I think my parents have always put a lot of positivity in our life. And that was always something I loved about our dynamic and our family. It was just everyone was so positive, and we really just are very close, and we still are to this day in a family chat. Always something positive and exciting, cheering everyone on for the biggest or smallest things in our lives. And I take that with me into friendships. And Mel talks about in the book, like what you said, like be the first person to initiate friendships. When I was a young mom, I think it was pretty isolating. It was, even if I had some friends who had kids, I think just the experience itself is really shocking going through those changes. And so to be proactive and to feel comfortable, like, I'm going to go meet someone. I'm going to go meet other moms who have young kids and join a group. I always encourage anyone who's becoming a new parent, like, be proactive to go join a walking strollers group or go and join a baby yoga group. Just something, like, be the proactive person, because you really never know. And it can be lonely, and it doesn't need to be. I think that it doesn't need to be.
Oh, I love how you just said that. That really spoke right to my heart, because when I had my daughter, I was 25 when I gave birth to her. And I have never felt more lonely in my entire life than how I felt after I had a child. Mm. I had no idea. And at the time, my ex-husband, he took a week off of work. Mm. 22 years ago, this was normal. You know, you spent... Actually, that was more abnormal, right? Mm-hmm. Usually it was like a weekend, maybe a husband would stay with you. But back then he took the week off, so I felt nice having him there as support. But then I remember that Monday morning when he kissed me goodbye and the baby, and he said, all right, well, I'll see you later. I'm headed to work. And I just thought, oh my God, it's January 20th in Pennsylvania, and it's ice and freezing, and I'm stuck in here with the baby. I don't know what to do. I don't feel my best, right? Just gave birth not that long ago. I'm breastfeeding, or at least trying to. I felt like I was in a box. I felt like I could not get out. Mm-hmm. It was an awful feeling and a very lonely feeling. And I didn't even know what that was. But you're right. You know what it was? I didn't have scaffolding in place to help me when that situation arose, that I could say, oh, you know what? I have been doing this painting class, like what you're doing now, or I have been at that gym once or twice a week, or taking that class, or there's that library I like to go to. So I didn't have anything like that in place. I just had a relationship with my husband at the time. And really that was it. And the old habits I used to have. See, I had that, but that all dropped away, right? I wasn't going to the bar and playing pool and all this other stuff I was doing in my 20s. I was now immediately, jumping into parenting and had no idea.
And then you can go through that feeling where, why aren't these people here? And she talks about that. She goes, there's certain phases in life where you can spend all this time wondering why certain people are showing up in your life and calling you and coming over to meet you. Let them do that. That they have their reasons for that. And you don't need to spiral and think of all the reasons why. It's probably not you. That's what she talks about. It's probably just their own chapter.
Yes.
And so then let me. And that's where it goes back to then let them do them. They have their reason why they're not there. So let me. So let you go out and bring your baby to the grocery store. I know that's terrifying, but it's a huge deal.
Yes.
Maybe just let your baby, you know, take them somewhere, go to an aunt's house, or let you call someone and invite them over.
Oh, wow. You know? There you go.
The worst they say no, then you're back in the same place you were before. But I was really lucky. I did have a lot of great family that came over to visit, and beautiful cousin who would come and cook for me and hold my baby. And my mom was there all the time.
Wow.
And I was really, really lucky. And I had cousins who would tell me the truth about what would happen to your body. And so I try to then tell other people that. But I think when I think about this book, it's a lot of like, and you do feel lonely, you need to take that first step. Mm-hmm. So when we moved here too, we didn't know anybody. We just moved to Savannah and knew nobody, like bought a house off FaceTime.
Right.
We just knew we wanted to be here. Uh-huh. And we had to make all new friends, build a whole new community. And so it was a lot of us putting ourselves out there, us introducing ourselves to people. And that can be scary. But again, what's the worst? They don't really give you attention. That's okay.
That's true.
We have each other and... I'll try again.
Yeah, that's great advice, Emily. Back to the friendships, too. In the book, she talks about the three pillars of adult friendship, which I love. So she's saying that the three pillars are proximity, timing, and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to give ourselves grace because, like you said, there's just different chapters in everyone's life, and not everybody's going to align with where you are in your life.
Mm-hmm.
When I was pregnant with my daughter, again, in my 20s, all my 20-some friends kind of fell away. Mm-hmm. They were not at the baby shower. They weren't very supportive. I think they were confused.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, they didn't see it coming. It was very strange. And but, you know, like you said, now all these years later, we're back to being friends again. Mm-hmm. Some of them, not all of them, but some of them were back to being friends again. And I think that if that door is open to your friends to come back when they're ready to, or when it feels right to them, then yes, let them.
Mm-hmm.
Let that door stay open, or at least crack it open a little bit so that, you know, maybe they will come back around.
Yeah.
And there's always room for new friends, too.
She talks about that, too, where she said, like, let someone be confused. It's not their choice.
Mm.
It's not their life. And that's okay, because they're not making that decision for them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to understand you. Like, let people misunderstand you. That's okay. Let you live that life that you chose and be the person that you want. And then they're going to most likely come around and be inspired. And if not,
yes,
that's okay, because then you may flow into a different chapter with somebody else. And I think that's hard to be okay and comfortable that they're not where you are at.
Like,
why aren't we still friends? Does that mean something happened? Did we have a falling out? And that's okay. They may just be at a different chapter. And like you said, you may come back around.
They may, but not.
I
like how you use the word inspire, which she does say a lot in the book. We can't change anyone, but we can inspire them to change. We can. We can be the change. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh,
go ahead. Let's talk.
I grew up as the older sister.
Okay.
Big family and raised by a very strong, incredible, a smart woman who really taught me to take control of my life. But then that sort of spiraled into, well, I'm going to try to control all these things and how they pan out because I want everything to be okay. And then I want everyone to be okay. I cannot control other people. And becoming a mom, those early years realized, I really have no control over how he feels in this situation. I have no control of his choice in this situation. I have no control over my partner's feelings in this situation. And not being able to control someone else, that's that current phase I'm really coming to, I guess, to peace with. And it's really powerful to feel comfortable knowing, like, I really only have control of myself.
Yeah.
And if I am more at peace and comfortable with that, that I'm actually having better relationships with people.
Yes.
Because I cannot control someone else. But I could maybe inspire them, but I shouldn't do it for the purpose of inspiring them.
Right.
And like she talks a lot about like the why you are doing stuff. Like when you want to inspire change in somebody, like why? Or like why is that problem affecting you?
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe take a minute and think, why is this bothering me? Why is this upsetting me? Why is this triggering me, quote unquote? And maybe that's just something you need to focus on yourself. And not being able to control others and situations is something as a parent, I think we all need to practice every day.
I agree. And I'm going to jump to the five whys that she talks about in the book. The five whys is a powerful tool for processing emotions. And what I like about it is she talks about when you're having a situation where you're really triggered, like you said, or upset or frustrated, sit down, get a journal, get a piece of paper, and just write down, why am I frustrated? Five times. I'm frustrated because. And then why else? Why else is this bothering you? Why else are you taking this so personally? Why? And then eventually by the fifth why, usually you'll get to the core reason, right? This reminds me of what my dad used to do when I was six. It's usually something like that, I would imagine. I haven't done the exercise, but I certainly will. And I will share that with other people who may be struggling too with situations that you think it's just the fact that there's dirty dishes in the sink, but what does it really mean? And maybe you need to take the time to figure that out personally.
She actually, I love this chapter. She talks about where she gets that five whys from. It's the Japanese car company. I forget which one it is, but one of their head engineers came up with this concept, and now they actually do this in college courses, engineers courses, so they can really find the core root problem of like a technical problem, but it's also a philosophical way to understand really what you're thinking and feeling. I actually did it through work at work when I read this.
At this point,
when I was reading it, I was struggling at work with managing a big team, and there was conflicting feelings of how we were changing a process, and some people were just really uncomfortable with a feeling that was not, they couldn't technically say why they didn't like something.
Okay.
And we had seven different people in the room, the virtual room, saying feelings, but no one could tell me like a technical thing. And I go, okay, let's get on a call. And I said, we're going to do this five whys. Like, and I explained it, and I kept just trying to say, okay, why and why and why. And it was a fear of an unknown. Really, when you go to the end, it's like, what if it doesn't work?
Oh.
And each person had like a different reason, but really it gets also to you feeling more comfortable and understanding yourself and kind of stripping away at all the noise, I think, and you just get to a really simple why, and then you're more confident in the why, I think. But sometimes we're so, I don't know why I'm feeling this. It's just a feeling, but underneath that is a core reason.
Yes.
And it was really helpful. And I like to try to do it with my kids, too. I'm like, okay, well, why do you feel that? Why do you feel that?
Mm-hmm.
It's really helpful. I think people should try it all the time.
I love it. I love that. And let's talk about emotions for a moment. She talks about in the book, I love this actually. I wrote this down, and this is something that I will use for life, this concept. Most emotions will arise up and fall away within 90 seconds if you don't react to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anyone's ever shared that with me in my entire life.
Mm-mm.
I've never heard it broken down that simply. And why is that so important? Because if you don't know what's going on inside of your body and no one's ever taken the time to explain to you what's going on inside of your body, how are you supposed to process? How are you supposed to regulate, self-regulate yourself? You're not going to be able to do that if you don't even know what's going on inside.
Ah, you hit a big word, the regulation, self-regulation.
Yes.
I think that's a big part for me, being a better parent is being able to self-regulate and being a good friend and being a good partner, but like definitely being a parent, because these littles don't know these things yet. We can't expect them to know what we know 30, 40 years later. They didn't spend all this time thinking about this. And so we're teaching them by showing them. We can't teach them by telling them all these things. They don't know what all these words mean. They haven't experienced the things we've experienced.
No.
So we have to just show them, right? And emotional regulation, I didn't really know what that was. So when a feeling would come up, if it scared me, I would try to like push it down.
Right.
And especially when you're a young mom and I was commuting, I was working, I was stressed, you know, you have a marriage, it's a different kind of relationship than you had 10 years ago when you were just hanging, traveling, having a good time. I would bury them down, or I would say, I'm not going to look right now at that. I have something else to do. I'm too busy because I don't know what that is. Or that makes me nervous. That makes me scared. That makes me angry. That makes me sad. I don't want to look at that right now. And then I would try to just look away. But then really those feelings would stay in your body. They don't leave if you don't really let them come out. And this sounds really corny, but about 6 months ago, I told myself, I'm just going to feel feelings.
Oh,
I'm not going to stop myself.
Okay, hold on a second. I love this so much. I hope everybody's listening to this right now. And maybe you need to do that for yourself right now or this weekend or maybe when you're not at work.
I was exhausted for like 2 months.
So please share. What was that like when you just said, I'm going to let myself feel everything?
Like if something came up, I would just let myself feel it. And I would be angry or sad or, you know, excited, whatever. But I really just in the moment felt it. And my husband and I joke, I was so tired and I couldn't figure out why I was so tired during that month and the next month. Then after that, I was more energized than ever.
Oh, wow.
And I know that sounds really spiritual. I'm not really like hokey like that. But I think it really was like my body just
releasing,
feeling things and now being more comfortable with just feeling it. Because, it was gone just as fast as it was there. But it's sort of like then my choice what to do with that feeling.
Mm.
That I'm in control of.
Yes.
So if I come up and feel scared about the situation, I can choose to keep harping on it and worry. Like, for example, if my kid is, he's learning how to, or they're learning how to ride their bike without training wheels and I'm letting them go. I'm watching them and I'm freaking out. Like, are they going to fall? Whatever.
Yeah.
I could choose from that feeling to freak out and chase after them and not tell them 100 times to be careful and like freak out and let that anxiety go through my body. Or I can just watch him learn and be excited for him to go through this experience and be there if he falls or cheer him on and just be at peace and remember I learned once and I came out okay. And I think, and that's a silly example, but you could even go bigger, like something that makes you happy. You can choose, or something that makes you really scared, or something that makes you sad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, that's the let, it's almost like let them, but like let my feeling be. And then like, what am I going to do with that feeling?
Yeah.
I'm actually in control of what I do with that feeling, which I didn't think I was.
You didn't think you were,
mm-mm.
But now you know you are.
That we're more in control of defining our life.
We are.
Or than I thought I was.
And I'm going to share this too. And something happened yesterday, which is funny how life brings back situations for you to replay in real time to see if you've learned the lessons or if you actually have grown from the old version of yourself. So I was on the phone yesterday with my daughter. I was in my son's room on his bed and my dog jumped up. My dog's wearing a cone now because he has an injury on his paw. He's healing. Yeah. But he's got this big cone, right? So he gets into stuff and he's a little clumsy. And I'm talking to my daughter on FaceTime and all of a sudden the dog jumps up and knocks my phone out of my hand onto the hardwood floor, cracks the entire back of the phone.
Oh, fun.
And I pick up the phone and my daughter's still on the phone. She's like, is everything okay? I said, not really. No, he just, Lois just cracked my whole phone. Like it just, and this has happened, Emily. This happened about probably about when Lena was maybe, I'd say she was about 9 at the time when I dropped my phone outside when we were walking and it hit the frozen grass during the winter and shattered. But back then, I'm not the same mom as I am now, because back then that was a lot of money that I didn't have as a single mother. So I definitely went into panic mode. I'm pretty sure I cried. I'm pretty sure I wasn't regulated. I'm almost positive.
I would have probably cursed.
I think I did a lot of those things. Yes.
And now I'd be like, well, yeah, that's that.
But now, right. And now it's different. So it's almost like, I wonder if she was waiting for that same response she got from me all those years ago. She didn't get that same response, but I will share this. It was inconvenient to feel that on the phone with her during a conversation. It was inconvenient to feel aggravated, frustrated, all of those things. I almost wish they would have gone away. But I think it's really important that we remember that as those feelings are coming up, they need to come up. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to push that away. It's not okay to brush it off and go, oh, everything's fine, don't worry, because that's not true. Everything wasn't fine. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was frustrated. And I actually, so what I did was I said, honey, I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go. I'm going to call you back later. Hope you have a great rest of your day. I love you. And I hung up the phone and I allowed myself to feel that frustration, you know, for the 90 seconds or whatever it was.
But you also chose not to freak out and then make her uncomfortable. Definitely. And make her nervous. And
Definitely. I just ended the conversation because, like, again, it was not convenient to feel all that while I'm on the phone with her. So I did let that go. Felt how I was feeling. Of course, filed a claim for the phone. Yep. No big deal. You know, we're in 2025. I'll have a new phone today and it doesn't cost me anything. Thank God. But to your point, you really have to feel these things. Mm-hmm. And then repair, right? Yep. So later on, I sent her a text just in case I was in some way rushing off the phone. I just let her know, hey, sorry I hung up with you so quickly. I was frustrated, right? I gave the emotions an actual name. I was frustrated because of the phone. Everything worked out. I appreciate you being, you know, understanding. And she's like, oh, mom, I understand. No problem. Mm-hmm. So I hope everything works out. So there's that, right? There's feeling things. There's allowing your body to express these things and just giving yourself space. Let me feel these things and let me handle it better.
You remind me of something that we talked about recently that's also in the book, which was how there can be two things at once. And yes. I say there's actually many things at once.
Oh, share, please.
I don't believe that, at least now, I don't believe that you can ever just feel one thing at once or that your life is ever just one thing at once. But movies, you know, growing up, it's like, oh, everything's happy or everything's sad or everything's bad or everything's good. It's not. But the reality is, like, you were feeling two things at once and that's okay. Like, you were feeling happy you were on the phone with your daughter. Mm-hmm. You were feeling glad, like, nobody got hurt in that moment. You were angry about your phone. You were sad. You were and you were annoyed that you're probably gonna have to go through and now call and now do all these things with your phone process. But you were multiple things at once, and that's okay, because that's the reality. But I think growing up and, like, what you see when people say everything's okay, don't worry, everything's okay.
Oh my God, it's the worst.
It's okay that it's not okay.
Exactly.
It doesn't make it the end of the world. It doesn't make someone a bad person. It doesn't make things not possible to get better. But it's like, oh, this does suck. Or letting your kids say they had a bad day and you don't fix it right away and tell them, it's okay, it's okay. You say, oh, that does sound like a bad day, buddy.
Yeah,
like,
what a bummer.
What do you want to do? Or, oh, do you want to talk about it or something? Like, let them be okay with thinking that's not good or that didn't feel great.
Because you're gaslighting otherwise. You're saying, like, oh, you're fine, when they're not fine. They're obviously not fine.
Then they're confused.
Yeah, it's like, am I okay? And, you know, someone recently, I was listening to a different podcast when someone was explaining your feelings inside, right? Mm. And how kids, when you run and scrape your knee, there's blood. You can see the blood. Other people see that. Your mom sees the blood, like, oh my gosh, she's getting a Band-Aid. She's cleaning me. I'm feeling better. I can already see the process starting to heal with the cream and the Band-Aid and the hug and all that stuff. But when your insides are hurting and there's pain and confusion, or somebody said something to hurt your feelings at school, and you're holding that inside your heart and you don't know what to do or what that means. No one can see the pain inside you. That's a real thing. Mm-hmm. And kids have to understand that that is real. And like you said, all they need to know is that I'm here. I believe you. I love you. And I'm sorry that you had a bad day.
I think that's a big thing, what you're saying with boys too.
Yes. Because they hide a lot inside.
I mean, I remember seeing growing up, just the phrase, like, come on, hold it in. Like, don't be a girl. Don't cry about it. Don't be a wussy. Boy. You know, or don't be a crybaby.
Wow.
But I definitely probably saw people say that to girls, but really it was more acceptable for a girl to be sad or hurt or uncomfortable.
Or typical. Oh, typical. There she is. She's crying. There she goes. You're being a girl again.
But
like
it was
you're being
more
a baby.
Uncomfortable uh-huh. for parents or fathers to watch their. I not in my family. We were a very like comfortable, accepting family. But like, I did see growing up, like adults being uncomfortable with little boys being upset or sad or angry, and it's like. I think the more we can let them be comfortable with feelings, the more actually they'll be able to regulate themselves quicker. And they don't stay in that. And I don't know. I just think that would help so many more relationships and people choosing paths in life that they're more comfortable and confident with and happy with and following what they're true to themselves. But if they're more comfortable in knowing their feelings, because if we do that to boys as a kid, telling them like, oh, don't cry. Don't do that. Like, man up or something.
Right.
Then they're going to be confused about their feelings their whole life. Or they're going to, I forget which, Mel does a lot of podcasts with Dr., I forget his name. He's like an Italian doctor. He talks a lot about ADHD and anxiety.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
It's like
something
like that.
I love him.
Really cool.
He's an older gentleman, too. Yeah, he's really good.
He talks a lot about how the word depression is suppressing a feeling, and then it will come out in other ways.
Mm.
And it's like even just imagining like suppressing something. And then how it comes out, like in your body in a different way, and your feelings in a different way. But it then confuses all your other feelings.
Wow.
So if you just let the feeling come out as your kids and say, it's okay. I mean, you don't need to like over dramatize feelings, but why not let a boy be like angry or frustrated or sad?
Absolutely. What's wrong
They'll
with
probably
that?
Move on, like you said, the 90 seconds faster.
Right.
And
once it moves through your body, it's gone now and you've processed it. So, and I held space for it. Do you see this a lot with parents? Like in sports and stuff like that, do you see a lot of the, or do you hear a lot of other parents saying like, stop it, that's enough crying, or man up, or brush it off, or all that? Do you hear that? Because I do hear that actually on the baseball field.
I don't hear like the man up, but I hear the like brush it off.
I hear a lot
or, like,
of that.
Like, get over it. Come on, buddy. Get back out there.
Right. Or it's just a game. You'll be fine, or something like that. Like there's a lot of that.
I do agree with the like, let's walk it off thing, because I think moving your body really does like sometimes shake it off. Sometimes exercise can help a little bit and like get you breathing and focus on breathing. But it's okay that they're angry. It's okay that they're frustrated. Like my husband will say, like, let them play it through. Your husband says it too, like play through that frustration and that anger. But I don't like when it's I think she talks about this in the book. My son, when I watch him play sports, not as much now because we've done a lot of different things. We've tried to help him through this, but he used to, I think probably like 6 months ago, he would put so much pressure on himself to be like perfect out there. And any little like thing he didn't do right, he would be punishing himself. No one else was punishing himself. And that made me uncomfortable to watch. And so I would try to change him because it made me uncomfortable. Instead of, and I'm like, why am I doing this? Because it makes me uncomfortable. Like, why can't I just help him? To help him, but also he didn't ask me to help him, so maybe just let him feel. You actually told me this. I asked you on the sidelines once, oh, how do you watch your kid just like be so frustrated out there? And you're like, just let him be frustrated. And then he'll know what that feels like, and he'll either want to change or keep going until he's hit his point. And
yes,
because that is really hard as a parent, to like be uncomfortable watching your kid be uncomfortable.
Yes. And but, not want to run in and fix it and make it okay. Because even though you think you're making it okay, you're not. You're only making it okay for you, right? You're actually getting in the way of something organically taking shape on its own the way it's supposed to. When you think you have to run in and cut the pancakes for him because you're afraid he's going to cut himself with a knife, run in, like you said, and tie their shoe because they're struggling. It's so hard to be a kid and have all these people watching you like you're under a microscope constantly waiting for you to fail.
It's
horrible.
I like this.
Yeah, like nobody wants to be watched all the time. No, but I feel like we are.
Yeah.
We are watching them all the time.
But she does talk about in the book, like how you can inspire them. And I think with kids, like making things a game almost puts it in them like, ooh, I had fun with that. And that actually worked. So like, I think it was like a month ago or whatever, how many weeks ago, the boys were playing a scrimmage. And I was like, all right, I want him to do really well now. And I want him to do really well for the game. So I made him a bet, like a game. Like if you tell your teammates, I think I told you about this, like if you give them 5 compliments today about something they're doing, and if you give 3 high fives, like you can pick an activity this weekend. I don't care. Whatever you want to do, even if I don't like doing it. And he was so positive that day. He was excited. Everyone was cheering each other on, and they played so well. And he came off the field like, we played so well. Like, this person got a home run. I got a double. You know, I pitched great. I'm like, wow. What was going on? And he was like, we were all really happy. And I was like, what do you think it was? And he's, And we kind of broke it down. I was picking out the answers for him, like trying mm-hmm. to get him to the point where he heard himself say it, which was, we were being positive to each other. We were cheering each other on.
He said that?
Like, that's where he got to the point. He was like, I was cheering him on and I was giving them high fives. Like, I got him. I had to, like, ask certain questions to get it out. But it was a game to get him to see that. But if I had just told him, like, if you do this, this will happen, that would never have worked.
No, it doesn't. And when we get back, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back from the break, I want to talk a little bit more about how you can't change people, but you can inspire them, of course, to change. And then as you're moving through things, you can just be there to be their cheerleader, right? Mm-hmm. And make sure you're paying attention to those little changes they are making and making mm-hmm. a big fuss out of it. Like, wow, I saw the way you showed up today. I saw one of the high fives you gave one of those kids mm-hmm. in the dugout. That was incredible. Like, I'm inspired to do that now.
Mm-hmm.
Such great things. All right, so everybody hang tight. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some more of Let Them and maybe a little bit of Emily's childhood if she feels up to sharing. Hang tight.
To celebrate Telfair's featured exhibition, The Art of the Character, highlights from the Glenn Close Costume Collection, which runs from October 10th to February 15th at the Telfair Museum's Jepson Center. The Jepson Center Auditorium is featuring Glenn Close's film Fatal Attraction on Friday, February 13th at 6 p.m. More information can be found at www.telfair.org.
The Voice Salon Series, Three Evenings of Seasonal Song, begins on Thursday, October 30th with Villains and Vixens. The seasonal tour in Voice continues on December 9th with Songs of Silver and Snow, and on April 16th with Music in Bloom at the historic Green Meldrum House at 14 West Macon Street in Savannah. More information can be found and tickets can be purchased at www.savannahvoicefestival.org.
You're listening to your radio station, WRUU, which is presented by people just like you, people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and other Savannah residents. Therefore, WRUU is your community radio station. So won't you please help by donating whatever you can afford to help your neighbors stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station with a monetary contribution of any amount. Again, you can support your local radio station at WRUU.org. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tim, the host of a show called Not Fade Away here on WRUU. Do you like the feeling of, oh, wow, I love this song, and I haven't heard it in forever? Then join me on Friday afternoons from 1 to 2 p.m. I play forgotten hits and songs that were good enough to have been hits but never made it. Let's keep great music alive together. Not Fade Away, Fridays at 1 p.m. here on WRUU.
Welcome back to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn, and I am here with Emily Grundy, and this has been such a fun conversation. So we will talk a little bit more about Let Them. I want to share a little bit about what at the beginning of the book, Emily, where Mel is talking about a situation where her son was going to a homecoming dance, and she was insisting that she buy a corsage for his date, and she spent all this time researching what color the dress was going to be that she was wearing, and she had this beautiful flower made, even though her son said, no, please don't do that. I don't want a corsage. And she said, well, that's just something people do. You should have it. And she overrided everything that her son was asking her not to do by buying the corsage. And then she talks about when they went to take the pictures at the girlfriend's house, and here she's uncomfortable, right? Mel's saying, like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe he didn't show up with the corsage. So she runs over and gives it to him to put on his girlfriend's wrist, which he did, but he was very upset about it because he insisted that he didn't want it. And the girlfriend accepted it. But then again, she had her own handmade corsage that she had made for herself. So Mel felt awful for just doing that, right? So there's an example again of just your child did not ask for help, but you feel that you need to step in and do something, I guess, to prevent yourself from being embarrassed or disappointed. I don't know. What do you make of that?
I mean, I think two things. You mentioned one thing, like prevent yourself from feeling embarrassed. But why? I think so often parents feel like we need to feel embarrassed for something our kid did or is doing or is feeling. And I think we should only feel, I don't think we should ever feel embarrassed parenting. But if I'm acting like out of my own moral code, which would be like I'm yelling at them, that's embarrassing for me. But if I'm just letting them be them and letting them fail and letting them not bring corsage, like that's a lesson for them to learn. That's okay. I can mention it and suggest it. But further than that, it's, you know, on them. I think, the embarrassing part, but also wanting so bad for things to go so right for your kid and to like, like set it up for success and remind them all the things they should remember because you maybe made, you know, those mistakes before yourself. And I think also when we get to these moments, we remember maybe what it might have felt like for our parents at that time. And we don't want that to happen again. And maybe there's guilt if we had done that to our parents. But that is a really good lesson because I remember the daughter at that part in the chapter says, "Mom, see, I told you he wanted to do it his own way. Like, why didn't you just let him do it his own way?" Or something like that. And I think that's another lesson, too, is like letting them do it their way. It may not be the same way as the way you would do it, but that's a hard thing as a parent. Yeah,
it is. And it's a practice. We practice this. We were at the Ghost Pirates game last week and our son just got over this virus, right? That he was not, he had a fever and he was, you know, blowing his nose and all this stuff. And we had the Ghost Pirates game. My husband and I took him and my son hates to wear a jacket. He never does. I don't even think he owns a jacket, let alone a pair of sweatpants. Won't wear that. He's always in shorts and a t-shirt. So I brought the sweatshirt for him just in case he would wear it. But of course, he did not wear it. So I'm sitting next to him. And then my husband is on the other side of him. I'm in a sweatshirt. I'm in jeans. My husband's in a nice pullover jeans. And our son is in a t-shirt and shorts who just got over being sick. This is so hard to just sit there and not look at it. Especially when I'm in such close proximity. I'm literally sitting right next to my son, who's obviously cold. We're inside of this stadium where it's cold, right? It's an ice hockey game. I must have asked him, I'm not embarrassed to say, I probably asked him like five times, "Do you want your sweatshirt? Do you want your sweatshirt? I have your sweatshirt. Do you want?" I even put the sweatshirt on his lap at one point. He kept pushing it away. "No, no, no." Finally, I said, "Christy, what are you doing?"
And did you pack the sweater?
Yeah, I packed the sweatshirt. Of course. Yeah. He didn't want it. He didn't want it from the minute we left the house. He didn't want it until the very end of the game. He did not want that. And it took everything for me to not push it on him, make him put it on. None of those things happened. But what I did do was I was cold, so I put the sweatshirt on my lap. So actually, I got warmer. And I just didn't look at it. I just turned my head, and I did not look. I just let him sit there and have his own experience. That's one of the hardest lessons, I think.
This is funny because last winter, I've been really lucky to meet all these great moms in these baseball teams. And there were so many mornings I spent being frustrated with my son going out in shorts and a t-shirt, going to school, going to the bus. And I would be out there in pants and a hat and a jacket. I mean, the mornings are cold here and then it warms up. But I'm like, come on, it's freezing. You got to wear pants to school. Like, wear the long sleeve, you know, school uniform. "No, Mom, I wear shorts and a t-shirt. I don't understand why I could see my breath." And I would get so frustrated. And my husband's like, "If he wants to wear that, let him be cold." And I go, "Well, let him be cold.
Like, oh, my God.
I need to control this." And I spent all these mornings being like, I need to prevent him from being cold. But why? Really, why? And then I eventually just wanted to kind of vent about it in like a silly way. So I texted all these other baseball moms. You may have even been on the chat at one point.
I was.
And now you're going to be on it moving forward.
I can't wait.
And I said this and I complained about it. And they go, "Oh, my kid's been doing this too. It's frustrating me as well." And then one of the moms go, you can probably guess what I'm joking about. She goes, "Good, let him freeze out there. Let him let him feel what it feels like to have frozen legs in the cold." And you know what? That then they'll learn. If they're really cold enough, they'll put on pants next time.
Yeah.
But if not, that's their choice.
Well, they sat there cold all day, right? Yeah. And then hopefully they'll figure that out.
And I think that's just an example of like, I spend so much energy.
Yes.
Trying to get someone else to change their thought and belief and action. And I could have spent that energy going right into work or having a good breakfast. And then I spent all the time and energy running around doing things where I didn't have breakfast. I just ran right into work. I was flustered. And
I think that's just a lesson to a lot of relationships. When you spend so much time and energy of your own personal mind, headspace, really trying to get someone else to change and see a different light and hear you and get them to change. And it's not my responsibility to do that. I mean, no. I can educate and then walk away. I mean, at that point, it's their choice.
We just have to take our own medicine here. Mm-hmm. You know, we just have to. And I love how you shared that about your son going to school in shorts. Same with us. Like, mm-hmm. we moved here 4 years ago. Again, my son does not own a coat. I mean, he's the kid in class where the teacher will say, all right, everybody get their coats on except Weston, since he never has one. I'm not kidding. Like, that's what the teachers told me. He will go out at recess when it's 45 degrees and just freeze. And there's just, what, like you said, what are we doing? We have to conserve energy is what we have to do as moms.
Protect
we have
peace.
To stop. We just have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And just ask once. This is advice for myself today. Just ask once about the sweatshirt. Next time I'll ask before we leave the house. I'll say, here's your chance. Would you like it? Because you know what? Two things are true. I'm not going to carry it for you. And you have a choice to take it or not. It's not my problem after that.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, but it's not my problem.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Because we have to then, like, protect our peace.
We have to. And I don't want to be a nag.
Yeah.
I don't nag my husband ever. I really don't. I do nag my son, though.
Yeah.
I'm not shy to admit that. But I could stop doing that. So thanks to this book for giving so much insight on these things.
But I think it helps you become a better parent when mm-hmm. you let them do their thing. Like, if you want to tell your kid, like, you have to wear a sweater.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
Let them go and be cold. Because if you wear your sweater and they see you wear your sweater.
Yes.
Okay. And also just then you walk out the door and everyone's happy. And
right.
If they're happy that way, you're happy your way.
Yes.
And that's okay.
There's a quote in the book that Mel shares. She says, pressure doesn't create change. It creates resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's so true. And we are creating resistance when we do these things and we're just not aware of it. Maybe we're just doing it. We think we're doing it out of love, but it's not love. It's control. And then when we admit that to ourselves, we can start to heal and change and grow from it.
She also says, similar to that, mm-hmm. I wrote it down too. We spend so much time at work working to try to make other people understand your... Oh, no, not that one. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Often I've made it my problem to solve other people's problems because I don't like how uncomfortable I feel.
Mm. And that's it. How do you feel? You can't handle it. You can't handle it. That's the problem.
And maybe just then I worry about my own sweater.
Yeah. Let me give you an example, too. Whenever my husband and I go out to dinner for an anniversary or a birthday or whatever it is, he can wear whatever he wants. And so can my kids. I don't care. And usually it's me dressed up and my husband in shorts and a nice polo, usually, if that. And sometimes, no. Sometimes he's like, is this okay? I'm like, is it okay for you? Yeah. He'll ask me, is this okay? Whatever he's wearing. Yeah, it's perfect for you. It's perfect for me. But here's what I'm wearing. I'm wearing this dress with heels. I'm going to do my makeup and my hair because that's how I like to be. That's what I like to do. I could care less what everyone else is doing. Doesn't bother me. No, that's how you let them, right? You let them do what's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody's happier that way.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us are actually doing that? I'm not sure.
And that makes me think of when you're younger, like in your early 20s and you're with girlfriends and you show up to a hangout or whatever. And some girl's like, I didn't know we were dressing up.
Oh.
Why didn't you tell me we were dressing up?
Right.
I just felt like putting this dress on today. When usually I show up in, casual wear. Why did it bother that person so much? They showed up how they felt comfortable.
Right.
Why was the intention to show up with us the same?
Shouldn't
be. And that makes me think now I don't want our kids to feel that way. I want them to show up how they feel comfortable.
Absolutely. Every single time. Even on picture day at school, my son can wear whatever he wants. I don't care. I don't care if he brushes his hair. I don't care. It's not my hair. It's his hair. Mm-hmm. I can make suggestions like, hey, do you want help with your hair? No, I'm good. Okay, no problem. Then I walk away. Okay, cool. I tried. I showed up. I asked. He doesn't need it. It's no problem.
Mm-hmm. It is hard, though, when you're trying to teach your kid a lesson that's like a big picture lesson. Here's an example.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if my husband ever talked about this on a show, one of yours, but he was playing like a substitute for another baseball team, and he had committed to doing it with them this weekend. It was like 8 months ago or something like that, and he did not feel like doing it. He was tired. It was Friday, and he was like, I don't want to do it. And we said, buddy, you made a commitment to going. And he was like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I really don't feel like doing it. And he got upset, all this stuff. And we're like, we don't understand. Like, did something happen? He's like, no, I'm just really tired. I don't want to do it.
And my husband and I were looking at each other, and he's like, I don't want him to just feel like he cannot do things and quit things. And I go, I agree, but I wonder also, like, are we pushing him for a certain reason? Like, what's the deal?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are we pushing him? Are we pushing him because we don't want it to look bad for us? We don't want to look bad for him. Are we going to force him to do something that makes him uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
And we really sat down, and he had a good idea. My husband, and he said, well, why don't we have him go? Because he made a commitment to that team. So whether he plays or not, he goes and he supports them. I thought this was great because I said, at this point, we're teaching him a lesson about commitment either way. We weren't forcing him. We were like, hey, would you feel comfortable going to do this because you made a commitment? So how do you feel you can stay committed to the team because you did make a commitment? And he went and he ended up playing the whole time.
Oh, because it was his idea.
It was his idea. Mm-hmm. He went and he cheered him on, and my husband went with him and they cheered. And then he goes, I'm going to play. I'm going to play. I feel good. But it was like, we still wanted him to see that commitment, but it's so hard to then wanting to teach your kid a lesson without like making them suffer something. Staying true to like a commitment you made is really important, but like, when do you know you're pushing them to be where they're uncomfortable, right?
I think that giving options is very valuable. And in that situation, I love the approach you took, but I also love this approach to that. You could say something like, hey, if you really don't want to go, here's the coach's phone number. You can call him and ask. And I'm sorry, you can call and tell him what you've decided to do for yourself.
Yeah.
Because, again, the accountability is handed to the child.
Mm-hmm.
This is your commitment. You can do what you want with it, but you're not going to ignore the commitment. But you could either show up like you did or call.
Mm-hmm.
Or I wouldn't even text. I would say call. Actually have a conversation. Because how many kids are actually going to do that?
That's
at 9
one.
Years old.
That's huge.
And again, that's okay too, because you're speaking for yourself as a child and saying, oh, thank you, mom, for handing me the phone so I can have a conversation and actually share what I've decided to do for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let the coach know how I'm feeling.
Yeah. I mean, it gives them accountability.
Right. And that's the parent's job to step back and say, I'm not doing this for you. I respect your decision either way, but I will not do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'll support whatever you decide because it's not mine. It's not my thing to decide, right? It's not my situation.
But I think what's important is like how you deliver something like that, like saying it calmly. You're not yelling about it.
No.
They're not in trouble for their decision.
Never.
They're saying, okay, if that's your decision, we've talked about options. Here's what you have to do. Here's what I would have to do if I told my boss I'm not coming into work.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to tell him. I wouldn't just not show up to work.
You can't do that, but you can do this.
Yeah. But saying it calmly, because if you say it, you know, if you yell about it or you seem angry or you seem like they're disappointing you.
Oh, yeah.
Then it
that's
becomes
confusing.
This dynamic of like, I need to do it for my mom instead of wanting to do it for myself, which Mel talks about in the book. Like, you know, let people be uncomfortable with you not going to certain family events.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you chose to do this with your family versus going to Thanksgiving or something, and let them be uncomfortable.
Yes.
That's okay. But then she goes, well, what about the things you do want to do? Like if you do want to go to that event for your family, do it for you. Mm-hmm. Don't do it because you feel someone else wants you to go.
Yes.
And you're going to let them down. Do it because you want to go, because you want to see them.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of similar with kids, like I don't want to ever create that dynamic like do it for mommy, like can you please do this
oh,
for me,
my goodness.
Can you wear that shirt for me? Like I would never say that to my kids.
I hope everybody heard that really loud and clear today. I hear this from a lot of people, a lot of adults that I work with in my coaching business. They share that their parents always said things like that, please do that for me. I even heard recently somebody shared yet this young man, he said his mom at one point sat him down and said, please break up with that girl for me. I don't like her.
God.
Yeah. When he was in his teens, please, she's not good for you, please. And the mother was crying. He's sharing the story with me all these years later. I couldn't believe it. You know, he was like, I'm still messed up over that. I didn't want to break up with that girl, but I felt like I had to because my mom was so upset and she was crying. So of course I broke up with that girl, but I regret it. That was my first love. I probably shouldn't have done that. Can you imagine?
Oh,
changing the trajectory of somebody's life. Excuse me. I mean, so I hope everybody heard that.
That could have gone a different way where then you create lies, you create resentment.
Absolutely.
You create like a life of secrecy.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Then maybe they're anxious. Then maybe they cope in an unhealthy way because they don't want to disappoint two people, one of them being themselves. So like creating truth in a kid younger, I'm seeing because I'm now like my partner and I, my friends and people I respect, like talking about things. And I think that's a big part now that I'm really happy about with books like this is like the comfortability talking about things you've struggled with or are struggling with or like, oh, I'm doing better here, but here's where I'm still kind of like not there yet. And like, that's why this book was really helpful. I felt like I was setting boundaries, but I had no idea what to do when maybe a boundary wasn't met.
Oh.
Because that's the kind of the structure of this book is let them, but then let me. Then like, what do I do?
I love how you shared with me in the beginning when I started reading, you said, I struggle with let me.
Mm-hmm.
You told me that. Yeah. Are you still struggling with the let me part?
No, because I felt at first it had to be like this statement, let me.
Oh.
Like, you didn't do this. Uh-huh. So, and I needed them to know it. And it was this profound thing. Or if it had to be like an ultimatum. Mm. But really it didn't. It was more, I had to just let me, like if I felt someone wasn't really behaving in the way that I had asked them to behave in, I could just take a step back. I maybe didn't have to go to every event or... You know, I maybe didn't have to answer every phone call mm-hmm. or something like that. I would go when I felt comfortable or in the right headspace or something like that. But that was me taking the action. And I think I even still felt the let me was their responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you still felt it was their responsibility.
I think before I was reading this book, I felt like the boundary was still on them.
Oh, so I set the boundary. Now you have to do what I asked you to
mm-hmm.
do.
And
that's not what she says here.
No, because I'm not in control of what they think, they feel,
the outcome.
They say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. And I wrote down here, to me, let them means let go. That's what I walk away with. And also, let me means to take action.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the action is for me to take. But I like what you said a few seconds ago when you were saying, like, it wasn't for me to, like, broadcast, like, hey, this is the boundary. Did you see it? Mm-hmm. Like, no, it's just for you to align with the boundary, mm-hmm. right? Yourself with, you need to align your actions with your words. Mm-hmm. If you say something, then you mean it, right? And you lead that way with integrity.
And it's also inaction, still in action. Like you can also not have to rush to make a decision about something mm-hmm. if you're not sure what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like if maybe mm-hmm. you're still uncomfortable with something in your life,
mm-hmm.
it's okay to be really comfortable about 80% of something and the other 20%. Like I'm not comfortable with this, but I don't know what to do. And that's okay.
That is.
I can wait till it comes to me. But my whole life I spent like, I need to figure out this 20% right now.
Mm.
I need to do, like, it needs to be my focus. I need to figure it out. And then I'll probably have another thing and I need 100 miles an hour at that thing. But really, I can't do that because it would consume my mind and I wasn't really present in my life. And now I'm much more like, oh, I'm actually enjoying my time with my kids and not feeling like I need to get through the day. But I'm like, living the day.
Yeah. It's a great place to be in, Emily.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still things I'm still trying to figure out the let me too. I think that will be a forever thing.
I agree. We have a few more minutes before we wrap up. I'd love for you to share a few things that your parents have taught you mm-hmm. over the years and how they've shown up as the best grandparents that they are for your kids. So what have they taught you that you carry with you in your adult time?
I mean, we would need a lot more than a few minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a compliment.
Are mm-hmm. amazing people. They've taught me a lot about, like, just keep showing up for people, saying hi every day. My dad, every single morning, says, good morning, I love you, and sends a video to the kids every single day. And they love it. They look forward to it. And I think it's just no matter what the day is, we start off with a smile. And I think he's always just taught me, like, no matter what's going on, like we have each other and we talk about things that make us happy and we celebrate the small little things and we'll always call each other. But if we can't talk that night, that's okay. And it's never, I've never felt like I've disappointed him in any way. I've always just felt like we are, you know, just a joy in each other's lives. And my mother's always just taught me a lot about, like, you are stronger than you think you are, and you can do this. You can figure it out. And you know, I watch her do things. I don't know how I hope I don't have to do, but I watch her and I commend her for them. And I learn a lot from her, but I think as a mom, I watched her do so many things, work a lot and take care of four kids. I have two kids and I feel like it's 100 kids. I don't know how
I don't know how
kids.
Anyone does that. I really don't have four kids.
But she created this beautiful home that and the dialogue never stops. We're always talking to each other. So I think just taught a lot about, like, perseverance and strength. And I think the two of those together just always give me a lot of what I need every day. But they show up every day they talk to their grandkids. They send messages. They send little cards. And
wow. I love this so much.
The distance, like, we don't feel the distance. I mean, FaceTime helps with that. But, I mean... The kids always talk about their grandparents and, like, look forward to the next time they're going to see them in person. But they talk to them all the time. And they know what's going on in each other's lives. But I think it's that proactiveness. I think that's a lot of what they gave me and still do, is like how to be proactive.
Oh, wow.
So I pride myself on being proactive in my life. This is my one life, and family is everything, she would say. Always growing up still. Family is everything. So.
Well, you're so fortunate.
I am.
Really. They did a great job, Emily. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate
Everyone
you.
Should read this book.
Yes, everybody get this book. Even if you think you don't need it.
Yeah.
You do. You need it. The message is beautiful. It's it's valid. It's important. And it's it will help you in some way. You'll walk away feeling empowered. I believe. I did. I did. And I really enjoyed it. So until next time, hope everybody has a great weekend. Happy Halloween.
Yes.
Have the best time. Enjoy that time with your kids and your grandkids. And let them.
Yes.
Right? Let them and let me. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.